Well, g'day everyone. Welcome along to the Short Baller Rugby Pass podcast. Scotty Mills and producer Ellis with you today. Looking back on the Test match weekend and looking ahead to next weekend's clashes, especially with a focus on the Australian Ireland series, the South African England series, and the All Blacks taking on France. Millsy, first of all, you were there at Eden Park on Saturday night. So let's get a soft opener out of the way. Did that yellow card completely ruin that Test match for you?
Oh, I don't think it completely ruined it, but it went a long way into sort of establishing the All Blacks, I suppose, run-on effect, really, to be totally honest. It was, yeah, it did have a massive consequence for the French team.
They flew the white flag after that.
Yeah, they came out strong, didn't they? And that's the thing, like, you know, going into the break, they sort of held out the All Blacks, and then once that happened, it was just, you just seen the emotion. The emotional side of them just sort of, they didn't want to be there anymore, and then once that happened, it was see you later.
Now, I know you've got to have a little bit of resolve about you in Test match rugby, and things don't often go your way, and the All Blacks have been yellow carded before, and every international team suffers a yellow card once in a while, but it's how you respond to that. Mm. The fact is, though, I think the French saw that as such a horseshit yellow card that it completely threw them. It put them on the back foot. Yeah. We'll get through some of the arguments that have arisen after that card. I mean, first of all, I don't think it should have been a card myself, at least to check upstairs. And given what happened later in the game, if that didn't reach the card threshold, then that certainly didn't reach the card threshold. I know there's been a lot of chat, and I know there's been a lot of discussion about leniency on the All Blacks, whether the referee was out of his depth in front of that home crowd. And it's a pretty hostile home crowd, the New Zealand home crowd, and largely because there's no away fans in an All Black home test ever. And a pocket full of Frenchmen is not an away crowd. That's a pocket full of very brave souls. So here's the thing that comes out today, though. World Rugby have issued a warning.
I know.
I don't even know why you would do that. It's toothless. It's obviously a response to criticism instead of just following due process. And Ofatunga Fasi, there is no punishment. And also, you've got the wrong guy. Ofatunga Fasi no doubt made contact with Rousseau's head.
Yeah.
But he's set. He's ready to make a tackle. The guy falls into that. It's the same game tackle that no one is talking about. And I find it astonishing. And I talked on radio about this today. It's not about being patriotic here. Patriotic is a veil for objectivity. Sam Kane's shot on Remy Grossel reached a threshold that should have at least been checked. And I think, can we agree on that point at least?
Oh, I definitely agree with that. That's why I was just wondering why Offa was getting all the heat, you know, because, yeah. I mean, I don't think, can he go any, perhaps he could go a little bit lower, but he was, you know, Gossel was already falling down. It was the fact, I think it was that swinging motion that sort of copped, you know, from Sam Kane that sort of, you know, copped Gossel. And so, you're right, but I just don't understand why you'd come out now and say, well, there's a warning. Okay, well, what's the repercussion of that warning?
That's right. What does it do?
He's not allowed his biscuits, or he's not allowed what? I mean, is it the fact next time he's in front of something, it was even interesting for them to come out and say it was almost bordering on a red card offence. Well,
It is or it isn't, though.
I don't get it. It's just, yeah, I don't know.
So this is such a World Rugby playbook. Yes, there's some criticism in the press in the Northern Hemisphere largely, obviously. Okay, we must be seen to be doing something, so let's do the most ineffective thing we can possibly do, which QED illustrates that we bow before public pressure. it's so daft. And then all of a sudden, Offa's just sitting there. He must be sitting there going, What? And everyone's saying that, and now you set the same news cycle over again.
Yeah.
So now we're going to have even more stories about the inability of the judiciary to act on this issue. Look, a guy got hurt, and that's really sad.
Yeah.
And no one wants to see that, and he got hurt badly. And I am aware that this is a contact sport, that you cannot mitigate for every head knock in the game, and you can't, and I've made that point very clear. But I am going off what we are being told weekly, if not daily, about tackle height, about shots around the head, about the head being sacrosanct, and then about an official team on the night who failed to act, and an organisation who appointed those officials who have signally failed to act as well.
Yep.
Now, that is a bad look for the game.
Yeah, I mean, it is. When you officiate something like that, I mean, I'll go back to the yellow card. Okay, he was quick to get into that pocket. And I just wonder whether that was sort of...
Love to see him at a bar.
Oh, well,
think he'd be that quick?
I don't know whether it would be, would he, the bloody referees?
I don't know. I don't know the bloke, but I hope he is.
But the thing is, you know, haven't we in the past had, you know, the TMO in the air saying maybe you should review this?
Yes.
So was it the fact that he went to his, you know, pocket so fast that he didn't have time? Or are they saying now, you know, there's a time limit to be able to, you know, because there's so many things that actually go back in court. You remember the Hurricanes had a big thing about it where, you know, they're going back and I can't remember who it was, a TMO, and calling and things like that. So
that's right.
Isn't that a place there and then to say, well, you should really have a look at it because it probably doesn't warrant a yellow card?
He didn't give George Ayoub a chance.
Yeah,
he went straight, and that's the problem. I mean, George may well have said, mate, it's not a yellow card. Had he gone upstairs and gone, George, I need you to check that tackle. But, you know, he blew the whistle. And, you know, I said after the game in the post-match show that I don't want to throw him under the bus because he was really good for a first test.
Yep.
But the unfortunate thing about it is that blotted the copybook for me. And you can't get away from the fact he made a significant decision in the game which turned the tide. And I tire of this argument, which is post-rationalisation. The All Blacks would have won anyway. Really? Maybe they would have, but no one can state that as a genuine fact. All we know is at the time it was 11 points each. And Millsy, I don't want to harp on about it, but you've been in that situation before where you think, yeah, we're starting to get on top of these guys, but all of a sudden their passion increases. The mistake rate goes up, the pressure goes on, and you don't get across the line. That has happened throughout history against this French side.
Yeah, well, it's always a momentum swinger. I mean, don't get me wrong. The All Blacks came out and they played superbly well. But that particular moment sort of just gave them a bit of a sniff. And in a test match rugby, that's all you need. Yes, the French played their part because they sort of, you know, threw up the white flag and, you know, used that as an excuse to say, well, okay, that's enough passion now and we'll see what happens. And there's some tries that the All Blacks scored, which... you know, and particularly the one where I think Ioane scored when they sort of mini drove and then came back blind. Now that was just a ridiculous read, you know. And so, but certainly it gave the All Blacks that extra bit of tempo they were looking for because they didn't get it from the ref. The ref wouldn't give them the mark. They wouldn't, you know, wanted to slow things down every time they got into the French 22. He gave the French some penalties, so you know, gave the All Blacks the tempo that they were after.
We've got Ellie Williams on the phone, Millsy. Yeah, I know.
Who?
He's answered the phone. Are you there, big fella?
I am, lads. How are we?
Oh, gee.
Here he is.
Hey.
Here he is. You sound like, are you getting changed in a telephone booth?
It's close. I'm actually driving in a motor vehicle because I've got a 9-to-5 job. What are you doing with yourself?
You don't have a 9-to-5 job. Don't lie to us. And I hope this is hands-free.
It is definitely hands-free, lads. Hey, I tell you on a sort of funnier note, I caught up with a guy by the name of Andrew Hoare just before. And guess what he was doing?
Having a beer?
Having a beer at lunch. Yeah. He was having a beer at lunch.
That does not come as a surprise to anyone listening to this pod. Hey, Warms, great to have you with us, mate. We had a brief chat this morning about that test match, but the All Blacks very good in the close. What did you make of the game overall, mate?
Oh, if we look at it, in that classic cliche of two halves. I mean, the first half was pretty classic. I mean, the French really tried things. The All Blacks probably weren't as cohesive as they would have liked to have been. And then we sort of had a scenario in the second half where we got a yellow card. Was it fair? No way it was fair. And then I think the French sort of said, oh, here we go again. This is inevitable and this is what we're going to come up with against the All Blacks. And they sort of, they almost lost spirit rather than lost the ability or the will to play. That was the concerning thing for me.
Yeah, I think you're right about that spirit element. You could see the heads just drop, and I don't think even someone like Mathieu Bastereau could turn the tide there by that stage. Soon Maxime Madar was getting run over by Ngani Laumapi and Damien McKenzie was cutting them in half. But what you've been up in France, Wams. We know that you know a lot of these guys. You've certainly played against some, but socialised with others. So what do they do from here?
I mean, you just got to... They're a good bunch of lads. And, I mean, look, we know the French have tagged with a sort of a tag that potentially they are, get a bit... They beat themselves up a bit emotionally. They take it to heart a bit too much. And I think that is one of the big challenges that you've got. they've got to take something out of that game. That first half was fantastic. They were playing, they were challenging, they were leading. And to lead at halftime is no mean feat. So to me, I think it would be one of those elements. Look, we had a bad 40 minutes. Let's drop it. We're on tour. We're here for a reason. This is a challenge. This is a series. And, hey, look, we know we can actually do this because in the first half we were winning. And, I mean, if you look at the first half, their set phase, they were winning. Lineouts were probably not as messy and executed as well as they'd liked. I think they probably shuffled the ball in the backs a little bit too much, but Mills will know better there. And rather than using sort of Buster's strengths and running direct, because, I mean, I've played with Buster for 3 or 4 years, and if you give him a clear target and a clear role, he is lethal. He's one of the best in the world at running direct and creating go-ball for a team, either in a forward position or a back position. So I'm hoping they don't lose too much heart, because there's a lot of opportunities for them.
Wams, speaking of that, well, I suppose, combination, though, what did you make of Whitelock and Barrett's performance?
I thought it was great. I mean, you lose a lot when you pull a name like Retallick out, but they sort of didn't seem to. Physicality was there, I think. I think Barrett really gets stuck in. He's one of those guys that loves the confrontation along with the huge workload. So, and we all know Sam and Whitelock and his workload. He just never sort of gives up. So I thought the captaincy is a good thing for Sam. He does love the pressure, and he does love the responsibility of looking after men and sort of leading by example. So I don't think they lost a lot, but I think Barrett, you know, has still got a few more yards to go to get to a Retallick type of player.
Wams, you've had your shoulder up some formidable backsides in your career, but let's have a little discussion about Carl Tuanukuafe. Imagine coming on for your first test match, out of the blue, a bolter, and doing that in your first scrum. You would have been pumped up like a bouncy castle if that had been your front row.
Jeez, that was amazing, wasn't it? I was jumping up and down like a goose at the stadium there. I was thinking, how good is this? I mean, first we saw a bit of emotion from the young kid. We all sort of try to look into his eyes, but that big black hairy moustache was just staring at us saying, you're going to see this a lot more. And then when he gets on, I mean, the beauty of it was he got on with, what, another 37 minutes to go?
Yep. Yeah.
So he didn't have to go and be a clown and make a name for himself in 3 or 3 to 7 minutes. He got a decent spell, and he got on in that scrum, and he just destroyed them. He would have definitely enjoyed that first beer, I reckon.
Wams, you've spoken about the French, okay? Where do they go to from here? I mean, you've been there. What's their mentality after such a loss like this? Because you know that Shag and co, they're going to analyse the crap out of that first game. So is it a case of them coming out strong again and bringing that sort of emotion? Because emotion's just not going to cut it. They did it in that first 40, but how do they make sure they come out and actually challenge the All Blacks in the second test?
Well, the first thing is, Mills, is what sort of attitude did they go into the shed with after the game? Did they think, oh, you know, we lost that, we didn't play well, or, hey, there's something in this, boys. We had a really bad second half and, you know, it didn't go away. Or do they say, we were close to this. We're over in New Zealand, a great place to tour. You've got another two cracks at the All Blacks and we've proved that we can beat them in a first half. So my view is, how did they go into that change room? Did they go in thinking, oh no, here we go again? Or did they think, oh, it's stuffed up. Let's get excited. Let's enjoy the week. And start cracking on from there. The thing is, Bills, with the French lads, is if they look at it from an excitement and a challenge point of view, then they go really good. But if they look at it something like a burden, where, you know, our sort of philosophy in the All Blacks was pressure was a privilege given to those that wanted to accept it. Well, they don't look at it like that. They don't want the pressure on them. They want the excitement, they want the energy, and they want the emotional the emotional truck, rather than the other one where the pressure on them. So I'm hoping they look at it and say, another week in Auckland, we're staying in Auckland, another week in Auckland, A few more restaurants we can try. Have a bit of fun. Let's get out and enjoy what Auckland City has to offer. Let's go down to Wellington and show the rugby public of New Zealand that we're not going to chuck it in and we're really going to get stuck in. And I think the latter is what they'll do, because Buster Rowe's quite a relaxed sort of a character, along with the coaching staff are relaxed characters, but, you know, they can turn it on.
Well, it's always a great pleasure chatting to you, mate, and I just want to congratulate you on a personal level of having left Andrew Hoare on his own with his beer. That is very unusual for you to up stumps when that man's in town. So this is points for you today, Ellie Williams. Points for you.
Well, it's not really, because I'm still waiting on that beer with you. I'm just going to check your phone number. Did you ring Wams or has he rung you?
No, I've got his phone number.
I've got a text here. I'm waiting for this beer from Wams, but I'm still having
it. It was a neutral discussion from two people that rang each other. the problem that I've got with you, Millsy, is that it's all one way, and I'm getting nothing back, my friend. If I got more back, then that beer would be flowing. Remember, Ibble Dibble? We can always have a beer together, mate. You know that.
Yeah, good on you, boy.
Ellie Williams, thanks, mate. Cheers for joining us today, buddy.
Cheers, lads.
Ellie Williams, former All Black lock. I think he makes some really salient points about the French team. And, you know, because Ellie has been involved in French rugby and latterly, of course, with Russing, and he knows those guys, and because of his reputation, you know, I know he's formed some great friendships over in French rugby. I hope he's absolutely right about what the French do this weekend. I don't think they have the variation in their game. And you take all the emotion out of it, you've still got to go out there and execute. And one thing I noticed about the All Blacks in this game, their attack structure, which has largely been over the last couple of years, three-man pods, middle runner taking it up. You've got the option, the inside tip, the outside tip, and the ball out the back. They have greatly increased the variation now and from which they're attacking from. Two-man pods, forwards running, outside backs running off the shoulder instead of prop forwards or locks. So you've got Geordie Barrett and Damien McKenzie both profiting off that pod running.
Yeah.
And even in the sort of latest stage of the second half, the pod became decoy only, just a front-running pod. But by that stage, the French didn't know whether it was two men coming at them, one man coming at them, three men coming at them. And you watched when McKenzie went through and put Laumapi away, or gave Laumapi the chance to put himself away, the French just stayed. There was a three-man pod coming straight at them, and they could not move. And they were never in the game.
No.
But they'd done so much throughout that test match to bamboozle with variation that suddenly the French inside defenders and even their midfield defenders just couldn't figure it out anymore. That I thought that was the real talking point about the All Blacks' quality in that test, the way they brought variation to their attack.
Yeah, and that was huge. I think for me, watching before the game, I knew the All Blacks would win. You know, that was the feeling I had, but I wanted to see what variation that they were talking about in terms of their attacking structure and things like that. Now, earlier on, it didn't quite work for them, but I could see what they were trying to achieve. So they were hitting really close, trying to push the forwards, defensive forwards, tight into the rucks, and then they were just hitting off Barrett out wider, almost to entice a back in to actually take when they talk about mismatches and they say mismatches when a back is up against a forward. Well, they were trying to get a mismatch where a forward with the ball in hand was trying to entice a back, and then that's when they broke through and got a little offload, and it was just impressive to see.
And running the game off Barrett was really intriguing for me, off Bowden Barrett, because he knew he had Geordie Barrett there as well, and they ran the game together really. Aaron Smith's passing game, of course, allows that to happen, but there was one attack in particular where you had your standard three-man pod. Barrett throws the pass wide to Luke Whitelock coming off a straight angle back inside. He is the third runner in the pod.
Yeah.
Rather than go to the middle guy,
they
go straight to the third. What that does, and on that occasion, it held Ballou in, and he had nowhere to go. The next move, Crotty breaks through, and but for the Aaron Smith Shepherd, that would have been a try.
Yeah.
But it was masterfully done, and the way they kept doing that throughout the game, and watching with Wyatt Crockett, we were talking about that. I mean, here's a guy who's only just retired, so he knows these variations when he sees them, and he was astounded that they were able to put those together after such a short space of time. We look ahead to this weekend in Wellington. It's going to be cold. It's probably going to be wet. It's probably going to be windy.
Hey,
you know it, Millsy. Is this going to play into the All Black hands, or does this play into the French hands, because it was a beautiful night at Eden Park Saturday night. Really was.
Yeah, it was. It was a fantastic. I'd like to see, I mean, if it is, I haven't looked at the forecast, and I'd like to see the variation in their kicking game, the All Blacks, because they went particularly to Barrett, similar to what the Hurricanes have done, where they've hit the middle pod and then sort of went contestable kicks on the winger almost to isolate them. So if it is a little bit wet and...
there was a fair bit of that in the first test.
Yeah, yeah, and so and so if it is, you know, do they go a little bit longer? You know, we've even seen a bit of Bowden's left foot as well, and so it's how they vary their exit plan, you know, accordingly based on the weather conditions.
We've got to look across the ditch in Australia. I thought that was a massive win for the Wallabies on Saturday night in Brisbane. The Irish come down. I know that there'd be some tired bodies after the last month and what Ireland have achieved, Six Nations and then Leinster through the European Cup and the Pro 12, but. That was a nuggety, gritty, hard-working Australian performance out there. And I don't think we should look at that with anything else but total praise. They ground out that victory against the second-best team in the world. An amazing turnaround for Australian rugby. I think we saw signs there that their combinations are starting to fire.
I definitely see signs. And when you see the personnel that's in there, and particularly 8, 9, 10 and 12, when they're starting to click and they've got – very good experience. I mean, Timu's there, but then you bring someone like Samu off the bench, or even he starts. I mean, that's a pretty solid platform. And then Beale's coming into some really nice form. And so, you know, perhaps they need to, I mean, I think check a band headphones, didn't he?
Cindy Lauper was not available to win that test for the Wallabies.
He's gone right back to the old school.
I think he banned Cindy Lauper, really. Did he ban headphones, or did he just ban 80s pop icons?
Oh,
well, that's the example he gave.
Oh, okay. Well, and the thing is, too, I mean, going back to the rugby, like...
Oh, what are you doing with your
almost
mic?
Almost lost the mic there. Like, the mic. It's almost like they should have won by more, because that try they got disallowed was just ridiculous. And so to grind out a win like they did, Pocock scoring, I mean, that's going to be massive for them leading into the championship. Like, well, even the second test, that's going to be huge.
Well, I think, too, what's so important for Australian rugby is, I mean, their fans would have just... bowed their heads if they hadn't got that victory.
No.
I mean, it's an opening test at home against a really good side where you've had a great and competitive relationship with over a long period of time. They had a good record against Ireland in recent years as well, certainly at home. But I think it just sets it up for the fans now. There's some belief back there. Look, Folau is playing great footy. Beale is playing great footy. Haylett Petty has shown that he belongs at that level.
Yeah.
And they've got some young and exciting front rowers and hookers in particular. And David Pocock. Is Pocock the most potent over-the-ball forward in world rugby at the moment? I mean, forget everything else about what forwards are expected to do, but just in there, over the ball, is there anyone better?
No, I don't think there is. I mean, and there's no disrespect to the like to Sam Kane and that, but this guy is an absolute freak when he gets over the ball, you know. He's really hard to move, and the intensity that he brought, you know, to that forward pack was just immense. So... it's hard not to go past Pocock as being the best in the world over the ball at the moment.
Johnny Sexton's got to start, doesn't he? No offence to Carberry, but Sexton's got to be there from day one, sitting out, plotting out the plan. He's that guy.
Well, he is, and you know, he's their go-to man over the last few years or so. He's instrumental. Obviously, he's had a pretty high workload, and they would have perhaps wanted to rest him a little bit, but. He'll start, you know. He'll start this week, and he'll bring a different sort of, you know, I suppose, oomph to the Irish attack.
It's a great loose forward trio that the Irish have got as well. And you think about CJ Stan and Pete Marnie and those sorts of guys. But I mean, is this an Ireland side now that you think could find themselves on the back end of an 0-3, or do they come back in this test? Are they the sort of, because I know Joe Schmidt, very clever man, strategically very good, tactically very sound. They are an accurate rugby team. Mm. They perhaps didn't show that on Saturday night. I mean, is there a turnaround in the cards here?
Whoa, gee, it's hard to know. The big thing is this has given, you know, the Wallabies some belief, massive belief to be able to do that. And so they'll go into this next test, you know, with a bit of a spring in their step, a few things, you know, that all of a sudden guys will sort of come out and express themselves a little bit more. The Irish, on the other hand, you know, this is an opportunity for them to come out and go, well, yes, it has been a long season. A lot of us have played in that Leinster team. It's been, you know, now we're still playing test footy. We've lost the first test. So it's more, from my point of view, it's more mentally than anything else. They've got the capabilities of going out there and a coach that knows, you know, how to, you know, structurally beat a team. But it's more mental now at this stage of the year.
It's not helping when every second Instagram photo is someone out of European rugby in Ibiza or Eos or Santorini. That's killing me, actually.
I see that, eh? I'm like, it's man, killing me. Oh, gee.
Jared Hoyata in Eos. I was a chef for 3 months on Eos.
Oh, serious?
Oh, yeah, I'm still feeling the effects. That place gets a hold of a man. gets a hold of a woman as well. By the way, Swedes. The Swedish on Greek islands. Man, that is, they are unique people.
No.
There's three things they like.
What?
Drinking, sun.
Oh, yeah.
And the other thing.
Yeah. Eating.
Mainly drinking and sun. And
anyway. Okay. I wouldn't know, mate. What was your specialty when you were a chef over there?
A specialty?
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure. I was drunk every day. I don't even know what I served. I don't know what I served up. My favourite bit though was I worked with a 5'2" Aberdonian chef called Grimsey. He was our head chef, and we used to like our nest frappes in the morning while sitting out there. But we also enjoyed tipping the chip oil out just on the other side of the road, and of course a lot of marble in Greek roads.
Yeah.
And then people who sped by on scooters would always slip because the oil would leach across the road. So we would get a grandstand seat before service, watching a whole lot of terrible tourists stack their scooters right in front of us.
Grimsey.
Still a head chef in Aberdeen, Grimsey. What a wonderful time.
Wow.
Anyway, that's an aside. let's get over to South Africa. Jeez, that was a good time. Let's get over to South Africa. What a comeback.
Wow.
Is it? What a test match. That's awesome. An amazing comeback. What, 24-3 down?
Yeah.
And Siya Kolisi just puts on the old... Calm it on down, boys. Let's get back into it. RG Snyman was insane. Vili Leroux was insane. And England capitulated. Is that their sixth straight defeat under Eddie Jones or fourth straight defeat? I don't know. Now the drums are beating for Eddie Jones. People tried to warn the press in England about this bloke. And now they're baying for his blood. If he does not win this series, where does Eddie Jones sit with the RFU and with the English rugby fan?
Gee.
What? Yeah, I mean, you tell me. Here's a guy. He's, mate, I'm in charge. I'm in control. Don't worry about a champ. I've got it. Well, at the moment, it doesn't seem that way.
You ain't got... No, there's a lot of heat on him at the moment. It's almost like, I don't know what it is, but I kind of, you know, all the stories that are coming out now, it's almost like he's diverting everything to him, you know, having a sort of an argument with the fan and things. Like, don't worry about the stuff that happened on the field. We'll just talk about this other sort of incident.
That is 100% what that is. It is smoke and mirrors. Look over here, nothing to see in the game. Yeah. Look over here. I had a fight with a Dutchman about pinotage. Beat it, mate. Yeah, Chris Wiley once beat up a fan on the way. Yeah, because the coaches used to sit on the stands. And I think it was a Ranfurly Shield game. And he got so sick of some fan in front of him through the first half who was just churning him out. So on his way to the stands, he turned around, clobbered the bloke, and then went and gave the team to him.
You would not want to mess with Chris Wiley.
No, why would you even? Well, no, you would not mess with Chris. Eddie Jones wants to make this about all the side issues rather than the fact that you blew a 24-3 lead. Now, there's two ways to look at it, as we did when the Waratahs came to the Crusaders and blew a 29-point lead.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at it and say, we're capable, and we just let it slip.
Yep.
Or you can say, jeepers, how many points do we need to score? Then the fear sets in, and then you've got massive human beings running at you next week in Bloemfontein. You know, I don't know. And just as the Irishman, long season for those English players as well.
Yeah, and not very successful season either. They've been, you know, different type of pressure. You know, the pressure of the public and the scrutiny they've been under because of the Six Nations and whatnot. And so I've seen enough there to say that they can back up and win the second test. I mean, certainly that first, you know, 15 or so minutes, yes, there was a few sort of... defensive errors from the South Africans, some basic defensive errors, but to get themselves, and they played quite an expansive game, did the English, and, you know, Johnny May in that scoring, man, he's got some pace.
Yeah.
And so if they can continue that, they just looked a bit tired too. Like it was almost like obviously when you're tackling a bit more and the momentum had swung towards the South Africans, they looked like they're a wee bit, they were fatigued a little bit. And so perhaps, you know, they need to look at you know, the way they actually play the game and perhaps not start so sort of, you know, wide and an expansive sort of game.
Well, it's tough at altitude, and you know, we always knew it would be a tough assignment for them. That's why they haven't won there for a very long time. Altitude's tough. You've played at Ellis Park. You know what it's like. You're coming off a long season, and then it becomes about balance.
Yeah,
where the All Blacks were so good in that game against the French was that they controlled position, they controlled territory. So ultimately, they trusted their defence to get the job done, very high under risk of them. Whereas against South Africa at Ellis Park, that balance becomes very difficult. Do I take the ball up, hit up after hit up, and drain myself for when I have to get on transition? Or do I let South Africa attack and back us just to make tackles? And, you know, finding that balance, I think, is what so many visiting teams find so difficult about being in South Africa.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And the thing is, you know, if you don't quite get it right, let's just say the English sort of went into, you know, all of a sudden got the 24-3 lead. Mm. They've got a side now that's looking to attack the whole time. If you go conservative and kick, it could almost backfire on you. So finding that balance, and this is obviously a way different scenario, like the same as the 2009 final with the Chiefs. We try to run every single ball. But within the first 20 minutes against the Bulls, you know, obviously we got annihilated that night. We got up nice and early and we thought we'd continue to play an expansive style and run everything, but we were drained. Mm. And so that's probably a key picture as to how not to get the balance, you know, right. And so that's what the English have to now go back and say, well, yes, we can score points, okay, but we still have to bring a balance into our kicking game and make sure that when we kick right out and into the stands so they don't allow the South Africans to go quickly.
Is the Wales win over Argentina the most overlooked result of the weekend?
Yeah, I mean,
they're just not quite part of the family yet, are they, Argentina?
Yeah.
I mean, we all focus on South Africa, Australia and New Zealand, but Argentina, they're supposed to be part of us, the Sanzar nations together. But that game just kind of happened.
Oh, I mean, considering what the Jaguares have done in Super Rugby, I mean, six straight wins.
Yeah, it was a poor performance from them.
It was shocking.
This was supposed to be, right? You get into Super Rugby, get together, that just goes right into international footy and you get pasted.
Yeah.
I mean, at home.
It is. And, like, I didn't expect that at all. I thought that they might actually come out and, you know, in saying that, the Welsh did play well. Hagley Parks was sensational. Yeah, it's disappointing that they've sort of gone down to the Welsh because we would have had a whole, you know.
The clean sweep, Millsy. You're after the clean sweep.
I was.
What's going to happen this weekend, Mills? Pick me three winners and margins out of the three big tests. South Africa, England, Ireland, Australia, New Zealand, France.
Okay. Let's go across the ditch and I'll save the All Blacks to last. I think the Wallabies can do this. I think they'll come away and they'll win by 10.
Yeah?
Yep. I think the Wallabies will win by 10. South Africa.
Are you recording this, Producer Ellis? You are, aren't you? You're making notes.
South Africa, England, the English, I don't think, got a chance in Bloem.
No Englishman ever has had a chance in Bloemfontein. I mean that in the wider context of things.
No chance in Bloem. Do we look at the Welsh Argentinian game?
No, I won't need to look at the New Zealand. No, I don't. I can't do the Argentinian Welsh game. I don't know why. It's just the series not exciting.
Okay, well, I think the ABs. I think they'll ramp it up a gear. It won't be a 50-pointer.
Not 50 points.
Nah, there's no. No, but they'll. I think the French have got some fight in them yet, and so yeah, it will be a 20-pointer.
You get all that, Alice?
Yeah. Yep, noted.
Are you happy with those predictions?
Sure. Yeah.
So you hold on to task. It's supposed to put money on this, so every time he gets one wrong, you earn off the deal.
To be putting money on?
No, he is. He's got to put his money where his mouth is. So, you know, we know, you know, you've got to make on this deal. I mean, you're basically here unpaid.
Yeah.
I know, which is terrible.
I got a half a chocolate croissant before.
Did you?
That you brought in. Thanks for that.
Did you?
Yeah, what did you bring? Yourself. There's hammering going on. It's maybe a good time to get out of the studio. We're on a construction site, brand new studio for the short ball today. So how'd you find the desk? I found it quite nice.
Yeah, it's just beautiful, isn't it?
Mm.
Even the smell of new timber. Wow. Yeah. It's good, eh?
That'll do for the short ball. Get into some test match footy this weekend, folks. RugbyPass.com, your destination. Catch up.